This is Sprint Week on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Live from Radio Row at the George R. Brown Convention Center, this is The Blitz. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
All right, I am here with one of the great football minds in the media. John Clayton is joining us on the program. John, how are you enjoying Radio Row? How many of these have you done now?
This is the weird part. I think this may be my 41st Super Bowl, but this is the first time that I'm on Radio Row during the week, because normally I would do a Saturday show, but it's a little bit different on Radio Row because there's not many people on Saturday. But I started this year in June doing a daily show. So this is the first time really in 41 years, can you imagine that I'm actually doing a show on Radio Row?
Now, normally you're walking around Radio Row. You're the guy being interviewed. How is it being on the other side?
Well, usually I'm the one trying to avoid all the interviews because I got so many things to either write or do and so many different assignments. And so I try to be as polite as I can and kind of being Dr. No. And so that's been kind of the unusual things. And, you know, you hate doing that because I'm usually Mr. Yes. But when you have a to-do list of about 85 different things at a Super Bowl, you know, you have to kind of move back and forth. And so, you know, a lot of times I don't get a chance to do as much on Radio Row. Like, I don't have a handler that takes me around doing the interviews because, unfortunately, a lot of times I don't have the time to be able to do that.
Let's talk, before we get into the Super Bowl game itself, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Houston Texans this year and what you saw out of them. Obviously a pretty talented team, but it goes to show how important the quarterback position is. I mean, what were your thoughts on that team this year, and if Osweiler is fixable, or is this something they're just going to have to ride out and hope that they can get better when his contract's over?
I think it's debatable with if it's fixable, but I thought I saw a lot better things. I went down to the 49er camp to watch when the Texans had the dual practices against them, and I thought some good things were going. I mean, I knew I covered about three Bronco games down the stretch in 2015 where Brock was the quarterback, and he showed a lot of good things. I mean, he showed that he had good leadership ability, his locker room was behind him, and he seemed to be making progress. And then I think what ends up happening here is probably more is being asked of him with the way the offense is, you know, in the sense that, you know, he has to do more of the protection calls. I mean, you know, there's more demand on that stuff. I mean, Bill O'Brien's great with quarterbacks. I mean, look what he got out of both Ryan Fitzpatrick and Brian Hoyer, but I think may have been too much for Brock Osweiler. I mean, if you watch it and you see it, a lot of times when he starts to get into games, the arm release point where he gets rid of the ball starts to drop, and when that happens, bad things start to happen. And so that's a mental type of thing, and it's a thing that I don't know if he can fix. I mean, he can't fix the fact that he's, you know, 6'8". I mean, he's a tall quarterback. Tall quarterbacks a lot of times struggle to be able to be successful. I mean, you go to Scott Mitchell, you go to Dan McGuire, there's a long line of guys. I mean, I still think that he has the mind to be able to do it, the leadership to be able to do it, but he's got to do it. And this year, it didn't happen.
One of the positives coming out of the Texans this year was the emergence of Jadeveon Clowney, who a lot of people were, this was a make or break year. It was, if he's hurt or bad this year, he was basically going to be called a bust. Obviously, he had a great season. I mean, is this, do you think it's just a natural development and this is what it was going to take for him?
Yeah, I just think for whatever reason, it took time, but you could even see it in 2014 and 2015. The times, and even though injuries kept him off the field, I mean, you can see the bull rush that he had. You can see flashes. And this year, the flashes became more normal. And you can see that he can be a top type of player. And it's unfortunate sometimes in a National Football League, if you get up there and you're a high draft choice and you think, okay, look, looks like it's going to be a failure. We've seen failures before, but this is not a failure. I think this is the real deal. And to think about what he did in kind of that bridge year without J.J. Watt and the things that he can do with J.J. Watt on the field if J.J. is going to be healthy, I think that's pretty scary. That's a good thing for the team.
J.J. being healthy is obviously a big question going forward. Two back surgeries, came back too early from the first one. I'm hoping he's going to take his time with this one, but when something like that happens to a player, is it hard to expect him to come back and be at the same level they were before the injuries?
I mean, it's hard with the way that he works because, I mean, nobody works as hard as maybe James Harrison of the Pittsburgh Steelers, but his workout regimen is brutal. I mean, as tough as any in the league, and that's what you worry about. I mean, and you know his mindset. He wants to play at the highest level. I mean, if he's 80% of J.J. Watt, he's going to retire early. And you hate to see that happen because since coming into the league in 2011, I think he's been, you know, the potential of a Hall of Fame type of player. He's been one of the most dominating defensive players in football. His ability to knock down passes in it. So what you hope is that he can level out and not have to train as hard, because that has the wear and tear in his body to shorten some things. So I hope he kind of revises things. I know, like, for example, one of the stories that Russell Wilson in Seattle talked about was that, he's down there and he gets different trainers. He gets 85 different trainers. Not as bad as James Harrison, but he gets all these different trainers. And one trainer got in his face and he says, "No, stop this. You're training too hard and it's going to wear down your body. Go into injury maintenance type of stuff." And so what you hope is that he finds a way to lighten the load a little bit so that it can extend as opposed to pulling down his body. I hope that happens, because he's great for the league and, you know, he's great for this team.
Bill O'Brien, one of the big offseason decisions he's made, and I think it's a pretty calculated risk, I would call it, is the Texans are not going to hire an offensive coordinator. He's going to do that job himself, which means if the offense is bad this year, there's really no one to blame, and that could be the guy's job on the line. Do you think that's a bad call for a head coach to say, I'll take care of the offense myself?
No, because I think what it comes down to is that ultimately it's going to be on him to make this right. And if he feels he can do that, then it can work. But, you know, the big thing you can see is that how's his patience going to be? And if his patience is not going to be there, then there's problems. And you know it in times, in 3 years, his patience tends to wear out. I mean, if he sees something bad, there's going to be some swear words and there's going to be some negative things said. And, you know, that could pull things down. But I think, hey, listen, it's his ship. He's the captain. He's got to take it the right way, because if the ship sinks, he sinks with it.
Well, let's talk about the game that we're all here for, the Falcons and the Patriots. How often do we get to see something this awesome? They probably the two best quarterbacks in the league this year. I would say number one and number two. And, I mean, obviously they're the stars of the show. That's what everyone's talking about. But how cool is it to get a quarterback matchup like that on the biggest stage?
Yeah, it is. And, of course, I mean, that was a great part about the championships, because then you have four great quarterbacks out there. And so that carried over, so you're not going to have that. And now for the second consecutive year, the MVP from the NFC is the quarterback who risen to the high level. It was Cam Newton last year, and it was Matt Ryan this year. But, again, now can good 1 year and great, you know, an elite quarterback top possibly the greatest of all time in what's going to be a close game? Because, I mean, you look at these Patriot games and, you know, we talk about maybe Bill Belichick becoming the best coach in NFL history and Tom Brady maybe being the best quarterback. They're all three-point games. And so Tom knows how to pull things out when he's not facing Eli Manning in these Super Bowls in the fourth quarter. So now he has probably a better chance than Matty Ice, who's great in doing it in the regular season, but is it going to be different in a game like this? So I still think that Brady has the edge, but there's a chance. You know it's going to be a close game, but which quarterback has the better chance in the fourth? I still lean toward Brady, even though, again, Matt's very good at this.
I've heard all week long and really all season long the Patriots coaching staff is the greatest, and they are great coaches. Do you think the Falcons coaching staff is maybe not getting enough pub? Because I feel like they've done a really good job turning that thing around.
Well, I mean, probably, because you look at, I mean, it is getting pub. I mean, their offensive coordinator is getting a 6-year deal in San Francisco. Dan Quinn is getting the accolades for being in Super Bowls in 3 of the last 4 years. That's encouraging. You know, the rest of the staff doesn't get any consideration. But then, you know, it's a first-time team, this group. I mean, again, Falcons have been to the Super Bowl before, but that was a lot of years ago, and that the players weren't there from that group. But now you have a whole new team coming in. I think that's just part of it. I mean, you're getting to know a new team that's, and I think has a chance now over the next 3-4 years to be in a run to maybe do this, because their defense will be better with what they do in the draft, and they still have a 31-year-old Matt Ryan. So it's like their window is just kind of opening. But now we'll see where it's going to go long-term.
As someone who follows the Seahawks pretty closely, I see a lot of similarities with this defense is what they're doing in Seattle. Schematically, it's almost the same thing, just the talent isn't quite on the level that they had in Seattle. Do you think that maybe the Falcons defensively are being a little bit overlooked in this, and some people are looking more at the statistics and saying, oh, they're a bad defense? Or do you think that the Falcons have a decent defense?
It's not there yet. I mean, what you would look at if you're comparing it to the Seahawks defense, it's somewhere between the end of the 2011 season and 2012. And that's why it's not there yet, but you can see the signs of it. Because what do you see? You see a Deion Jones, a mobile middle linebacker who makes play after play after play. You see a hard-hitting safety in Keanu Neal. I mean, he's Cam Chancellor. I mean, he's not as big as Cam Chancellor, but, I mean, he's got a Cam Chancellor jersey in his locker room all the time because that's who he wants to be. You see long, angular cornerbacks, and that's the Seahawk model, and they get the beginning of a pass rush. They got one, they got Vic Beasley. They're going to need another next year. Once they start putting all that together, that's where I think you'll see the rise because the defense can only go anywhere but up. Is it there yet? No. In the second half of the season, it was getting better, but it's not there yet. But if it can have just one good game, then it could have the confidence to really make a pretty good run over 2-3 years.
Maybe one of the things that's been overlooked with that Falcons offense playing as well as it has is the offensive line continuity and being able to run out the same guys and have some consistency on the offensive line, which they haven't had the last few years. Do you think that's a big factor for them as well?
Well, you know, that's the one thing that Thomas Dimitroff has been studying, as everybody's been studying. What do you try to do? And that's where there's such a philosophical difference. And you can see a philosophical difference in the way things are done on both teams. You know, Thomas, who came from the Bill Belichick system, always thought, as Bill used to do, get young offensive linemen and develop them, particularly guard to guard, because you don't want to overpay those guys. You'll pay the tackles. You don't want to overpay it. Well, Thomas had tried to do that and failed. The offensive line in the middle of the line was terrible. And that, you know, they signed Andy Levitra, and he wasn't as good in 2015 because of what he had at center. Now they get Alex Mack, and now the line becomes one of the five or six better lines in the league. They put money into it, where Bill Belichick on the other side still goes with young, inexperienced guys, but Dante Scarnecchia coming out of retirement to help coach the offensive line. So that's a battle that goes different ways. But where the success was, getting Alex Mack made that line right.
How much longer do you think the Belichick-Brady, I guess, the duo lasts? And do you think when they do go out, it's going to be at the same time? I mean, they're so connected in their success, and they've become the greatest coach and the greatest quarterback together. Do you think that they walk away at the same time? And if so, how much longer do you think they've got?
I thought if you talked to me at the beginning of the year and probably years before that, I'd say they both go out at the same time. I don't think so now. I think what will end up happening is that Brady wants to play two or three or four more years, and Bill will stick around maybe a little bit longer after that, because it's not like he has to prove anything, but I think he likes it so much that, you know, extending past that and getting a few wins, I mean, you know, it meant so much. And I think where his reputation grew was going 3-1 without Tom Brady. And you look and you think, you know, how good can this team be without the greatest quarterback of all time? It still can be pretty good because of what he's able to do. But I still get the feeling he may want to coach more longer than Brady may want to play.
If Brady loses this game, does it change the way people look at him historically, or is his book written as far as where he stands all time?
Yeah, in my opinion, his book is written, but those, you know, who had been, like I had been, long supporters of Joe Montana and some of the other quarterbacks that went 4-0 in the Super Bowls or 3-0 in the Super Bowls, they're going to come back and say, nope, he's tainted, he's 4-3. So it won't affect where I would rate him, but it will affect others because they'll say 4-3, well, that's just not good enough. But now that's why it's important for Tom Brady to win and be 5-2.
One more before we let you go. We talk about this a lot on our show and about who that next great quarterback is going to be as we see Peyton leaving. You know, Brady is coming into sort of the twilight, because it's not like he's going out badly, but he's coming up on the end of his career. Andrew Luck was supposed to be that guy. It looks like maybe it's a hold up and wait on him. I mean, obviously Aaron Rodgers is great, but do you see the next young quarterback that is going to be a great, great NFL player?
Yeah, it's just going to be the adjustment because, I mean, you watched it. I mean, it was always Brady and Manning and all that, but now I think you can see Derek Carr is going to be one that's going to step up. Cam Newton, even though we've dropped back this year, was one that had stepped up. I think you can see Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston, both being quarterbacks, can do that. So where it's a quarterback-driven league, and it's hard to find those quarterbacks, there are still enough quarterbacks that, you know, Russell Wilson is in that mix. I mean, arguably right now, one of the top five quarterbacks in the league, and what you can probably argue is that, okay, last year in 2015, Cam Newton was number four. This year, you probably say that Matt Ryan was number four, with the top three being Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Ben Roethlisberger. But I think you can see that the young guys are starting to rise and getting into the top mix, and that's a good thing for the league.
When you see how important quarterback is, and you can't win without a good quarterback in this league anymore, and then you see the guys that are coming out in this year's draft, and I don't know how you feel about it. I don't think there's any great quarterbacks in this draft. But you know teams are still going to, because they're so desperate to find one, they're going to make that reach for him. Do you think teams are making mistakes when they do that?
Yeah, when you reach, I mean, just go back to 2011. In that draft, which was a J.J. Watt draft, 12 of the top 16 players made the Pro Bowl. 12 out of the top 16. Nick Fairley was the only non-quarterback position player to not do that. The other three were quarterbacks that were overdrafted.
So it's obviously a big factor. John Clayton has been our guest. I appreciate you taking the time. I know this is a busy week for you. I know you've got a daily show going. I really appreciate it. It's been great. And enjoy the game.
Hey, happy to do it. Thanks.
Hey, guys. Thousands of people went to mycomputercareer.edu and took that free career evaluation last month. They started 2017 in a dead-end job, not making enough money, and decided to do something about it, finally. And at My Computer Career, they can start their new life as an IT pro in months, not years, even with zero IT experience. It's not too late. You can join them. Attend classes on campus or live online just twice a week to get the skills and industry certifications you're going to need to start your new career. How good is this? Last year, our job placement team had most students employed before graduation. Just go to mycomputercareer.edu, take the free career evaluation, and you're on your way to making more money. Financial aid's available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so go take the free career evaluation now at mycomputercareer.edu. That's mycomputercareer.edu.
This is Sprint Week on ESPN 97.5.
All right, guys, you want to get some action in on the big game? You're running out of time. You need to go to mybookie.ag. And if you have not checked these guys out, this is a perfect weekend to get into the action. If you think you know who's going to win, you can bet the coin toss or what color Gatorade the winning coach is going to be wearing. All you have to do is log in now. Check out all the props. They've got props out the you-know-what, man. I was going through a bunch of them. Don't just watch the game. Lay down some money and be a part of it. Join me and thousands of online players. Start betting at mybookie.ag. It's an industry-leading sports book. Its players enjoy the fastest payouts in the business when they win. That's the best part. You win, they pay you. It's not like these other crap sites where you got to wait 2 months to get a check that may or may not clear. Join now and score free cash to place your Super Bowl wager on the house. Right now, MyBookie is giving away up to $3,000 to every new player. Sign up today. Score an instant 50% bonus on your first deposit. Use promo code FRED to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie today or call 844-900-BETS. Play, win, get paid, MyBookie.ag.
This is Sprint Week on ESPN 97.5. Live from Radio Row at the George R. Brown Convention Center, this is The Blitz. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
All right, I am here with the bantamweight champion of the whole wide entire world. Amanda Nunes is here. Amanda, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well. Are you enjoying the environment, the Super Bowl? I mean, this has got to be pretty wild for you. I mean, your rise has been pretty dynamic, and to from where you were a year ago to be here now on Radio Row with the belt, I mean, that's got to be a pretty cool year.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, first time he been like enjoying every single interview. It's amazing.
Talk about the what this year was like for you and where you were, you know, at the beginning of 2016 and what your expectation was. Because I would imagine you had to have really kind of exceeded your own expectations even for what you could do in 1 year.
Yeah, you know, like, since I got UFC, I know I'm going to be the best. But some things don't work very well. You lose fights and then things don't work the way you want. But I always keep moving forward, you know, think positive. And I know I will be the best one day. And now I'm the best. And I believe in myself so much. This is the key in everything happening in my career, in my life.
After you won the title, everyone was still sort of believing that, well, Ronda will come back, she'll do what Ronda does, and that'll be that. Was it frustrating for you to have reached the mountaintop to become the champion, but then still not really get that full respect because people still thought Ronda was the best in the world?
Honestly, like, the things make me like more like upset and the hurt was the fact the effect that I have the belt and I don't have the respect that I supposed to have. okay, I know she was the most dominated. I know she did a lot for this sport, but she stopped for a little bit after she lost. And this sport moving forward. And then have a new champion. And that's why we have the belt. You know, UFC is supposed to, like, give more attention to the champion. Because that's why they make the belt. And I know Ronda was huge. But I think they're supposed to make this a little bit equal, you know?
Do you feel that's what happened with Ronda? She just stopped progressing in her game, and she was just unable to keep up with the modern times of MMA? Do you think that's what happened with her?
I think this is the greatest thing in this sport. If you don't evolve, you for sure you're gonna be left behind. And happy with the Ronda Rousey, you know? I'm not going to be that kind of champion. I always going to back in the gym and want to learn new things and then be better and better. Every fight I want to bring new things. This is going to be the difference between Ronda Rousey and Amanda Nunes.
Your next opponent now, Valentina Shevchenko. I'm guessing you watched the fight with Juliana and Valentina?
I was there, but I beat her already, you know? And now it's going to be a chance to really finish her. Because my fight against her was by unanimous decision I won. And now it's going to be the best moment to, like, finish it.
I talked to her yesterday, and we talked about that fight and how the first two rounds, she really was a slow starter. And the third round, she turned it up and won the third round. This will be a five-round fight. And she says she learned a lot from that about pacing of MMA because she comes from Muay Thai. That's a different paced type of fighting. Do you feel like, do you see that she's evolved as a fighter as well? I was surprised to see her armbar Juliana, so I was impressed with what she's done. But do you think she's evolved since the last time you saw her as well?
Like she learned, I learned it too.
Right.
And I beat her. You know, she learned it the hard way, I learned it the better way. If you're smart, if you keep learning when you win. I did that. And yeah, for sure. But honestly, she's, for me, is the same fighter. She fight me. And she, since my fight, I watch her all the fights. She's the same since have all the fights. And she got Juliana Pen. Got caught. This is the right thing. But it's taking long for somebody to learn jiu-jitsu. You don't think you're gonna learn it grappling fast like that. You is gonna get locked and then submit somebody. This is happy. This is MMA, you know. But she's really still the same fighter than I fight her. And I know how to beat her. She know that. She know I know how to beat her, and I will finish her next time.
Are you excited for the since the 145-pound women's title is about to be contested? Are you excited to see women's MMA continue to grow? I mean, even since you got into the sport, into the UFC?
Yeah, sure. I think it's gonna be like always grow now because we like always evolving. The fans love to see, you know, our fight in. We always bring a good show, and I think it's going to be, like, all over. It's going to be, like, huge.
There are several female fights on the card here on Saturday. Are you going to go to the fights on Saturday? And, I mean, do you pay special attention to the ladies' fights?
Yeah, for sure. My teammates fight, too, Tisha, Tessa Torres, and I will be there to watch all the fights.
I don't know if you're a football fan. Are you an NFL fan? Yes. I know NFL's not big in Brazil, but are you a fan?
Yes, sure. You know, I've been here in America for 8 years, and for sure, I watch it. I love it. I'm a huge fan. And I want to see, I know it's going to be a great game. I know that these two teams is strong, and I can't wait.
I want to know who you think is going to win.
I always play with my friends and Dolphin fan.
Okay,
and I'm from Florida. But I know it's going to be awesome, this game.
I'm guessing Dolphins fans hope that the Patriots lose. that's what most Dolphin fans think.
Actually, I like the Patriots, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think it's a very good team. And Falcons as well.
Well, that's Amanda Nunes. She is the women's bantamweight champion. Her next defense will be against Valentina Shevchenko. I don't know. Do we have a date for that yet, or is that undecided?
We didn't even talk about yet.
No. Okay, so it's going to be it'll be coming up soon. That's the next fight for both of them. That's the fight. We just don't know when it'll be. But that's Amanda Nunes. Thank you for the time. Enjoy Radio Row. And enjoy the fights here in Houston on Saturday.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
All right, guys. It's getting to be that time of year. You want to spend more time in the backyard, but you don't want to do it out there on your old faded pool deck or your grayed out patio, your outdated driveway.
you can fix those things with a carved stone overlay. Carved stone gives you the superior look of real stone over the top of your existing surface for way less. It's troweled, hand-carved, custom-colored for your home, so it looks great. It's twice as strong as concrete, and Allied stands behind it with a 7-year warranty. If you've currently got a blank slate in the backyard, Allied will build it from the ground up, from a functional concrete patio to the outdoor kitchen and patio cover you've been dreaming of. They'll help you on residential and commercial projects, and they'll help you save money as well. They offer 0% financing up to 18 months. Save yourself the hassle and expense of tearing everything out and starting over. Go with a carved stone overlay for the look and feel of real stone for less from Allied Outdoor Solutions today. You've got a few options with Allied. You can go by the showroom, I-10 in the Beltway, check out what they can do with your own eyes, or you can go online to AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com and check out the carved stone project's photo gallery. That's AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com, or call for a risk-free estimate, 713-465-0400 for Allied Outdoor Solutions.
Sprint Week on ESPN 97.5. Live from Radio Row at the George R. Brown Convention Center. This is The Blitz. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
Joining us now on the program is former NFL quarterback, former Texas Longhorn quarterback, and now with Bleacher Report, Chris Sims joins us. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing really good, man. Just happy to be here. Super Bowl coming up. It's always exciting.
When I was thinking, I always try to do this every Super Bowl, I try to think of someone who has ties to both teams, and you were on my short list this year because you obviously coached in New England,
right. And
I know from my time working in Austin, you have a very close relationship with Kyle Shanahan.
Yes.
Are you sort of torn this week?
I mean, this is a weird Super Bowl for me. It is. It's really conflicting. Add to that, my brother's on the practice squad for the Atlanta Falcons, too, as a third quarterback. So it is. My heart and everything will be rooting for the Atlanta Falcons because of Kyle Shanahan, because of my brother, because of Raheem Morris, who's a receiver coach there that was a DB coach and a head coach in Tampa when I was down there. But my mind is picking the Patriots to win the football game. But, yeah, I root for New England weekly. I mean, I work there. I got, you know, good friends up there that I really like and enjoy. Of course, respect the way they do things. But it is a weird situation to kind of be a part of.
Being a part of that staff and being around Coach Belichick, what's it like? Is it really is fierce and, you know, serious as everyone makes it seem to be?
It definitely is, yes. It is a grind on a day-to-day for the New England Patriots, but it was an unbelievable experience. I mean, I loved it. I did. My big thing was, you know, I have a 10-year-old little girl, a 6-year-old little boy, and I really just wanted to be around them a little bit more because, as you imagine, when you're in New England, they stick you in a dungeon and you only get to come out when, like, the sun's down. And I was, you know, in the building for 18 hours a day, and it was hard to stomach being around away from my kids, but regardless, it is an unbelievably detailed organization. It's one of the few organizations of football that has a front office and the coaches all on the same page. It's all about supplying Bill Belichick with information, and then Bill makes the moves. Bill is unreal. He's the smartest coach in football history, and he's one of the smartest men in the country, period. I tell people all the time, if Bill was working on Wall Street, he'd be running Wall Street or Goldman Sachs. He'd be the wolf. That's just what kind of guy Bill is. He's extremely smart, thinks outside the box, and that's why they've been so great.
I've been expecting Kyle Shanahan to have a year like this for some time, and maybe you can tell me, do you think it's more of he's developed into this, or he just finally found the perfect situation with a guy like Matt Ryan and a guy like Julio Jones, and it's just really come together for him?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a big part of it, no doubt. This is long overdue in my eyes. I mean, how does a guy like Sean McVay get a head coaching job after calling plays for a year and a half before Kyle Shanahan, who taught Sean McVay everything he knows? And Kyle, out of the last 10 years, has had, what, 7 of the top 10 7 top 10 offenses? So there's haters in the NFL. People don't realize that. There's a lot of people that are clueless and have no idea what's going on, and they don't like the people that are smart and have ideas and know what's going on. And Kyle, because his last name is Shanahan, people didn't want to give him any credit. He was in Washington with his dad, and people were like still saying it was the Mike Shanahan offense, and Mike had nothing to do with the offense. You know, even when he was in Houston as the OC there, people were giving Kubiak the credit. It was still all Kyle Shanahan. I think we can all see Kubiak's offense, nothing special. So it's long overdue. And I think, yeah, there was a little bit of an establishment out there that Kyle's abrasive. He's pretty much going to tell you how it is, and he knows what he wants as far as football is concerned. And I think some of the older establishment guys in the NFL had a hard time swallowing that pill.
I almost feel bad about the fact that Kyle is now going to be a head coach, only because, and I was a guy this season who was saying Kyle Shanahan's going to be the first guy offered a head coaching job, and then the jobs start to be offered and all the names come off the board. I actually thought Kyle and Josh McDaniels would be the top two guys.
Well, they should have been.
Then there was down to one job,
yes,
which was the worst job, and both those guys were still available. It looks like Kyle's going to get that 49ers job, but that's going to be a difficult road to hoe for him. I mean, is there concern that this could take a lot of bloom off of his rose?
Well, hey, this you're right. I mean, the 49ers stink. They're the worst team in football other than the Cleveland Browns. They are 31 out of 32, I think, if you really, like, honestly evaluated their roster. So he definitely has his work cut out from him. But this is a guy that's wanted to be a head coach since he was a little kid. I mean, when I met him at Texas, that's all he talked about. He wanted to be a head coach. That was his goal in life. He knows what he wants. He understands football from all aspects. He hired a guy that he likes as a GM and trusts as a football evaluator. Yeah, John Lynch may be a hair inexperienced at it, but John Lynch knows football. He knows what a defensive tackle is supposed to look like and a good safety and what offensive linemen look like. He might not have the process in place for scouting yet, but they're going to hire people there to help out with that process. Now, Kyle, you know, the John Lynch got 6 years. I think as a head coach, you all want just a chance to get your personnel, let your system flourish a little bit. And at the end of the day, that's all you can ask for. And yes, more than likely, he's going to be the head coach of the 49ers. You see Lynch got a 6-year deal. That's probably what Kyle will get as well. And with that, I think every coach wants that situation to, okay, I got some time to actually build what I want here. And I think Kyle and John Lynch will hit it out of the park.
Were you surprised that his name didn't come off the board before it came down to just the 49ers?
Definitely, but I think it goes back to the old thing. You know, Kyle is he's tough. You know, Kyle's more New England than he realizes. I tell Kyle that all the time. I go, you'd fit really in with the New England. You're just like those guys. Like, you know, you'll tell your 60-year-old offensive line coach if he's an idiot for the game plan that week. Like, no, that's stupid. Let's do something new. But like I said, there's an establishment in football that doesn't like that. And there's, you know, football's flawed. Football, there's just a lot of guys that are not qualified to be in front offices and coaching in football right now. If I was just going to be honest with you, they're in it because they politic. Or take, for instance, I'm in New England, and I got guys sitting next to me. How'd you get this job? My dad's the doctor for Mr. Kraft. My dad's the lawyer for Mr. Kraft's son, whatever it may be. What do you know about football? Nothing. Okay, great. But you're sitting next to me. There's too much of that in the NFL in my eyes. There's not enough about just results. It's almost become a very political job of elect, which is really annoying to me and somebody that's been around football my whole life.
I always thought that when you were in Tampa, you maybe didn't get the fairest of shakes. And I always said, like, it's funny to watch John Gruden now as an analyst where he can't find a negative thing to say about a quarterback.
Right.
But it seemed like when you were there, everything about you was wrong. And do you feel like maybe you just fell into the wrong situation? And had you gotten into a different situation, do you think maybe you could have had more of a career than you did?
Well, yeah, listen, you know, I got injured. That was a tough situation. I almost died on the field with losing my spleen. I mean, so that really hampered my career. Yeah, John and I, we got a great relationship now. We text, we do all those things. We hit a few bumps in the road there, especially after I got hurt because he was trying to run me out of town. And I know he's a head coach and he probably wanted to save money on the salary cap, and he knew I wasn't healthy, so he wanted to get a new guy in there, and I fought back, and I ended up winning and staying that year, and I'm sure that pissed him off towards the end. But I was with John Gruden longer than any other quarterback he ever had, and we all know he doesn't like young quarterbacks, and from everything I know, he didn't really draft me. Rich McKay drafted me, who was the GM there at the time, and then I got there, and I think he was a little taken back by my talent. You know, whether, you know, people out there think I was talented or not, I was. I could run, and I know it wasn't Vince Young. I could run, but I could really throw it. I could really throw it. And I think it almost bothered him that I wasn't his guy at first. Like, I wasn't his guy, but yet I went out to the first few practices, and everybody was like, holy cow, this is Chris Sims. He can really throw it and do all these things. And then I think that's when he went back and watched my Longhorn film, and it was like, he brought me into the office one day. I can remember. And he's going, damn, how'd you make this throw? Holy cow. You know, you guys can't even pick this blitz up, but you're making the throw down the field. And he was just tough on me. But it was good love, and I learned a lot of football from John Gruden, and I wouldn't take that back for anything.
True or false? He complained about you being left-handed because he didn't want to flip the playbook.
No doubt about it. True. Yes, it bothered him that I was a left-handed quarterback. You know, the offense was we added more plays, not always because we wanted to take advantage of a defense or add more plays just because to take advantage of skills in our offense. We added more plays just because Gruden was bored, and he's like the mad scientist. So he was always wanting to do more or do things that he wanted to do. But yes, it did drive him crazy that he had to think about play action protections and boots the other way around. But at the end of the day, he figured it out.
I'd love to ask you about what's going on at Texas and what's happened in really like the last 5 years, like the end of the Mack era, sure, into Charlie Strong and now what's happened post Charlie Strong. What were your thoughts on what Texas football's been in the last 5 or so years?
Oh yeah, it's certainly at a low point right now. I mean, there's no mistaking that. You know, well, this is a good subject. First of all, Charlie Strong, I do think, got kind of a raw deal. I don't think people, and this is not a knock on Mack. I love Mack Brown. He's a legend in college coaching. I just don't think people really realized how void of talent Texas was at the end of the Mack Brown era. I mean, teams like Georgia Southern, North Dakota State have had more people drafted than Texas the last 4 or 5 years. That should not be. And that wasn't because of Charlie Strong. So I do think he got a raw deal. Regardless, I'm really happy about Tom Herman. Tom Herman's the man. He was down there when I was there as a graduate assistant. He worked for Urban Meyer. And one thing I know about Urban Meyer is, Urban, you better be a real football coach to work for him. And that's a positive thing. I think Tom will get it turned around. And we just got to start getting talent back down there again. And I think we'll be on top of the college football world here before you know it.
Well, good luck to you, man. I followed your career. I was a big fan of yours at Texas, and then I covered you your last year at Texas when I was there in Austin, and got to watch you in the NFL. Glad I got some time with you. Rod Babers told me to mention the wood to you. I got to know, where's your tattoo at?
My tattoo's right here, man. I got it on my ankle.
Who is it?
It's wrong way. It's Rod.
Rod Boskaif and Kyle
Shanahan and Montrell Flowers. But there it is. There's the W, man. I'm ashy. I need to put some lotion on.
Oh, there you go.
It is. Yep.
All your boys. That's loyalty, my man. You guys still stay close?
We do. Montrell is the one guy that I've not talked to him in a little bit. I need to reach out to him. We kind of lost touch. But me, Bo, Kyle, Rod goes off the radar a lot. That's what Rod's MO is. Rod, you know, he'll talk to you but then disappear for a year. But whatever, regardless, it was a special time for me, special friendships, and my time at UT was awesome.
All right, brother. Appreciate you taking some time with me, and enjoy the game this week.
Thanks, buddy.
Hey, guys. Fred Fowler here for Whit Myers. And you know what? I went and picked up a bottle of Space City vodka today because when I get my vodka on, that's what I drink. I got it down there at the main specs, went in there, picked it up. And you know what? When I get home from that party tonight, that's what I'm going to be drinking. And they've got so many great products from the Space City vodka to, you know, I love that single barrel, which they also happen to have in specs. But if you really want to go try all the stuff, go check out their craft cocktail bar and lounge. It is fantastic. They've got, it's such a setup there. It's just like a great bar with foosball and golden tea and pool. And, oh, by the way, great, great whiskey, great, great vodka, gin, you name it. They're open Thursdays and Fridays from 3 to 9, Saturdays from noon until 6, and you can try all their products. And if you want, take a tour on a Saturday. It's a great date thing to do. And they also have private events. Visit them at 16711 Hollister at Whitmyers.com. That's Whitmyers.com. Houston's first distillery, Houston's best distillery, Whitmyers.com.
This is Sprint Week.
All right, guys, this Valentine's Day, you want to give a gift that's more personal than roses, that's more creative than candy, and something that will last forever. That's where the Bear Gram from Vermont Teddy Bear comes in. A Bear Gram includes a personalized teddy bear, gourmet chocolate, gift card, a signature box, ranging from sweet to funny, romantic to friendly. You can send a Bear Gram to inspire smiles, make memories, or just break the ice. And I think this is a gift that goes beyond just for your personal Valentine. I think if you got a daughter or a son, this is a great gift for them. Check out the entire collection, over 50 Valentine's Day bears at VermontTeddyBear.com. The world's softest bear. They've got the 6-foot hunk of love bear, which still lays on our couch in the studio.
They've got the Zombie Love Bear, the 50 Shades of Grey Bear. They've got an I Love Lucy Chocolate Factory Bear. Vermont Teddy Bear has a ton of ways to say I love you in a personal, heartfelt way. Remember, guys, Valentine's Day is Tuesday, February 14th. Delivery is guaranteed. Visit VermontTeddyBear.com or call 1-800-829-BEAR. Tell them AJ with ESPN 97.5 sent you. That's VermontTeddyBear.com.
Sprint Week on ESPN 97.5. Live from Radio Row at the George R. Brown Convention Center, this is The Blitz. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
All right, I'm on Radio Row with Houston's own Derek the Black Beast Lewis. Derek, how are you, man? How are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. Is this your first Super Bowl Radio Row?
Yeah, it's my first and my last.
Why is it your last?
Because I hate people.
That's not true, Derek. I know that's not true. I know you're a man of the people. You're the people's champion.
No, I'm not The Rock.
Now, your opponent didn't change, but the fight changed. You were going to be, I guess, were you going to be the co-headliner on UFC 208 or the co-main event, and then they moved you to main eventing the week after in Halifax. Did it affect you at all? Did it change anything for the way you prepare? What's it do for you?
No, it didn't change anything. You know, it was really a blessing in disguise because I was sick all last week. I believe I had the flu. I don't know what it was. You know, I had a fever and everything. So it was just, like, good that I needed another week of training and getting ready.
Your opponent, Travis Brown, is a dude who he's fought some big names. This may be your biggest name opponent yet, and he's a big, strong, dangerous dude, but also a guy that has shown that he's susceptible to being knocked out. I mean, is this stylistically a fight that you're excited about?
Yeah, I'm a stylist. I'm like really happy to fight this guy anyway because I know he's a good fighter, and I just wanted to test myself against him. You know, it was no disrespect to anything like that. I just wanted the fans to have a good fight, you know, and I wanted to be in a good fight as well. In the same way, whenever I called out my previous opponents, it was no disrespect towards them. I just believe they was good fighters, and I just wanted to test myself against them.
You were extremely disappointed in the way you performed in your last fight. What do you think, looking back at the tape, what did it come down to? What do you think caused you to have a showing that you weren't happy with?
I believe it's because my opponent was running from me the whole time. And also it's because my foot movement wasn't there, you know. I didn't practice like that, you know. I wanted the fight how I practice, you know. I wanted to carry my training into my fight, and I wasn't able to do that in my last fight, and it pissed me off.
When you look back to that Roy Nelson fight, which was a fight that at that time was easily the biggest name you'd fought in the UFC, when you think about that fight, when they were about to announce the decision, did you think that you had won that fight? Were you nervous that the judges were going to reward him for the way that he fought?
Yeah, I believe the judges was going to reward him because I was in his hometown and it went to decision. And just about all the times I went to decision, the fight never went my way.
Obviously, you hit that dude with some of the hardest shots that I think he's ever been hit with. I think he said that himself. Were you surprised that you weren't able to put him away late in that fight?
Yeah, I was very surprised. It was like whenever I landed that right hand at the end of the fight, I was surprised that he was still in it. You know, I thought for sure he was going to lay back on his back and cover up after that punch.
So this fight now being the main event means that it's a 5-round fight instead of a 3-round fight. Does that change your preparation at all? Does that affect you at all?
Oh, it doesn't change anything. You know, my last fight was a 5-round fight, and I practiced the way I had practiced. And fought in that fight, my conditioning and everything was good, and I liked the way I had felt. And so I practiced the same way, like I was going into a 5-round fight anyways.
A win here puts you where? I mean, if you beat Travis Brown, you're looking at, you know, maybe one or two more fights until a title shot. Is that what you're thinking as well?
Yes, I believe one more fight after Travis, I'll be having a title fight. Only because a lot of the top five guys getting popped for steroids and a bunch of other stupid stuff.
Those guys who get popped for steroids, and Mark Hunt, obviously, you know what he's been saying about this. He's threatened lawsuits to the UFC for letting these guys fight on steroids. Does it bother you if you hear a guy's using steroids, or does it even concern you at all?
It doesn't concern me at all, not one bit. I just look at it like the guy's just insecure and just they're just scared. They're trying to do everything and anything that they can to get the edge.
How invasive is the steroid testing for you now that USADA is doing it? I mean, are they knocking on your door early in the morning? What's it been like for you?
Yeah, I've been tested like 3 times this year already. You know, it really doesn't bother me at all because I don't do anything anyways. So all it is just taking a piss. So my schedule is not really that busy. I really don't be busy like that. So they really don't bother me when they come to my house.
The UFC on Saturday here in Houston, this is, I think, the fourth time there's been a card here in Houston, maybe the fifth time now. Houston's become a regular stop on the UFC schedule. Are you looking forward to even the next time that they come back, maybe trying to get on a card here in Houston again?
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully the next year or later on this year that they come back to Houston, hopefully it'll be like pay-per-view and I'll be on that card.
The fight card itself this Saturday, you have any fights in particular you're interested in seeing?
Not at all. You know, probably won't even watch the fights.
No, you're not going to be down there for them?
No, I'm not. I might go. I don't know. We'll see. But I'm really interested in none of the fights that's happening.
What about all the parties and things like that are going on around the Super Bowl? You're a big star now. Are you going out to any of these parties? Are you going out amongst the people, or are you staying hidden?
I'm in training camp, so it's no use for me going to a party if I can't drink and have fun, you know. So I'm really not going to be entertaining none of that.
It's Canada, but it's still another country. Is that something that you've done before, or is that something that's going to be weird to you?
Yeah, I believe it's going to be weird. You know, I never been to Canada before, and I'm still waiting for the okay for me to enter the States anyways, because they have real strict laws about my background. So I'm still waiting to hear back from them.
They still haven't okayed you to go into Halifax yet?
Yes, they still haven't. I'm still waiting.
I would assume the UFC wouldn't have put you on as the main event if they knew they couldn't get that taken care of. I mean, did you let the UFC know in advance that there may be some kind of difficulties?
No, the UFC already knew that before, because I tried to take a short notice fight before, and they didn't let me do it only because they're saying because my record and my past history and all of that. And now I guess they wanted me to do a bunch of fingerprint screenings and a whole bunch of other stuff, like 4 or 5 different type of photos, and my passport had to be all good and all that too. I had to write a letter letting them know my last, where I lived at the last 10 years and where I worked, the address to those places, and the people I came in contact with and talked to them, their phone numbers and stuff like that. It's a bunch of stuff. I had to get in contact with the FBI to let them know everything, what was going on.
One of the things that I've been curious about, I remember a few years back, you had gone, I think, to Florida and trained for a little while, just trying to get outside your bubble of training. Are you happy with the training you're getting here in Houston now? And how has it changed since that time when you tried to go to Florida and get outside of the area and train with some more heavyweights? What's it been like for you? And is this training you feel enough for you to become one of the top heavyweights in the world?
I believe it is enough. You know, right now, the last few fights, all I've really been doing is just Stairmaster. You know, I hit pads here and there and work on my takedown defense here and there. But really, what's been getting me in the most shape is the Stairmaster at Lifetime.
Now, sparring, is it difficult for you at this point to find sparring partners who are on your level?
I haven't sparred in like 4 years.
Really? Why not?
Just guys don't want to spar, you know. I haven't sparred in 4 years.
You've never asked me. You know I would come and help you out. I'm your boy.
You come if you want to. You just sign that waiver.
That is Derek, the Black Beast Lewis. He will be headlining the UFC card in Halifax. It's 1 week after UFC 208, correct?
Yes, correct.
And he'll be taking on Travis Brown, who, and I know that's a guy that you've been looking to get your hands on. I'm excited to see this fight, Derek. I'm excited for you to get the opportunity. And like you said, I think you're maybe one, two fights away from a title shot. And that's really an amazing story for you to come from where you've come to get into there. I'm very proud of you. I'm proud to know you. I'm happy for your success, my man.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me, man. It's going to be great.
All right, that's Derek Lewis.
All right, gang, I want to thank Derek Lewis for joining us there. And another fun day at Radio Row brought to you by Sprint. That's going to wrap it up for us. We're going to go get our big Texas party on. We will be back tomorrow, assuming we don't die. Until then, stay sporty, bitches.
This is Sprint Week on ESPN 97.5.